Hello and welcome to The Inverted Castle, a podcast about Metroidvania games. I'm an eldritch abomination from beyond the stars, Thomas Blight, and with me is the intern who is going to seal me away forever, Eric Fox.
I was randomly generated. I got green hair.
And we're talking about the game Chasm from BitKid Inc. It's a more in the Castlevania style. It's also interesting in that it brings in some procedural generation while not really being a roguelike.
Yeah, the idea being that this is a full game that is generated at the start rather than a run-based kind of thing. Although there are some, I guess, little incentives that they kind of put in, like challenges and leaderboards and whatnot. But for the most part, like, one seed will get you 8-10 hours of game time, so not the same style, but does bring in some of that replayability.
Yeah. How did you think about it overall?
Overall was not, I don't know, the most impactful, I would say. It was definitely, when you say it's like Castlevania, it is very like Castlevania.
It's true.
Insofar as, like, the weapons have the same kind of arcs and swings. There's the landing cancels for the horizontal swords. All your magic are the classic axe, dagger, holy water, boomerang. I think the only one that's not actually in Castlevania is the Mega Man shield.
Yeah.
But that's the Mega Man shield. It's also curbed from elsewhere.
Yeah, it's fine. It's not a standout, I think.
That's kind of the problem. It is competent. Like, it is a fun thing to play, but it's also things I've already played before, a lot of it. The main thing that it kind of tries to stand out with is, I guess, yeah, the idea that it's procedurally generated. Your game is unique to you, depending on your seed.
Although, so this is kind of interesting in that this is now the second time I've played it. I played it pretty much at launch, and then I'm playing it again now, and I gotta say, doesn't feel different. Like, the second run felt like the same, to the point where I actually wanted to go look up the maps to make sure to see how different it was.
Yeah, you actually shared with me how the maps differ, and it turns out not a whole lot in the parts that matter, I'll say.
Yeah, like, I get that there are definitely set piece components to it.
Yep.
But I guess there's just a thing of, like, there aren't that many set pieces. Maybe they didn't want to make a bunch of content that, like, you wouldn't necessarily see. So, like, it's the same rooms rearranged kind of thing.
Yeah, there are certain layouts and, like, the interstitial, like, connective tissue bits are all, they can be anything. Slam a few enemies in there, there'll be these 2x2 square rooms of some sort of platforming challenge, spikes on the walls, climbing up ladders and whatnot. But you're gonna hit the elevator that gets destroyed on the way down in the mine. You're gonna hit the tutorial for the grapple claw, or whatever it is you grab onto ledges with. And all of the main, like, exits to each zone, to the other zones, will also be in the same cardinal directions as well. Like, all the general skeleton of the map will kind of lead to the same places.
And, like, my old save is actually missing some of the exits to the other zones, but I think that's actually, they added those in a patch. That's not a random generation thing. That's my save is so old that the world had already been generated before they fixed it.
Okay. Like, there's been some upkeep slash content added to it. Okay.
Like, in particular, I noticed that I don't have a path between the catacombs and the keep, or a second path between the catacombs and the keep in my old save, and I do in my new save, and so do you.
Interesting there. I can kind of see why that they'd want to keep, like, locations of where exits are, because of the fast travel system that they have implemented. For each zone, there are, like, up to 4 teleporters to different spots in the map of whatever map you're in there. And those will vaguely correspond to where they are located on the main map. Like, in the little room, the top exit will go to the top of the gardens or the keep. So it's, like, short of it being more labeled on your little mini map there, it's a decent way to be be able to keep track of where you want to go when you're trying to like backtrack and re-explore areas.
But I guess with the maps being fairly similar, the question I have to ask is, what did this procedural generation actually get you? And I feel like the answer is, I'm not sure it really did anything for them. I mean, they have daily challenge runs.
Yeah.
Right? They have an arcade mode, which I didn't touch, and a race mode, right? That lets them do that and have it, like, vary up.
Yeah, the idea of having a unique experience through the game kind of falls flat when you do... When you're going through it through the first time, you can really tell when something is bespoke versus, okay, this is a type of room, and then you see a different version of that type of room in the same zone pretty clearly, and it just feels actually less unique in that way.
Yeah.
As well as all the drops you're getting, like outside of the main upgrades, I'm assuming equipment, your standard armor and weapons are also from enemies and in the chests and whatnot, I believe are randomly generated.
Yeah, you know, I didn't pay enough attention to tell, and it's been too long right. since I played it last, to be like, oh yes, that challenge room had the exact same item in it. It didn't feel particularly different, and I think in particular things like the familiar hats I think were in the same or relatively same places.
Yeah, like maybe the challenge room before getting to it will be different, but it's going to be somewhere in the mines, let's say.
Yeah,
that's fair. But there is a weird thing of equipment that drops from enemies where they can spawn with rarity and be slightly better. Like I think there's like the blue and the gold variants, which will be better than their normal style, but I only saw three or four throughout my run, at least that were usable at the time I found them.
Yeah, I got about the same amount, I don't know.
And it's fun, like getting, leather armor that's slightly, has two extra numbers on it is cool, but it's also not sexy. And it's unfortunate because this game is very much aping randomizers of these styles of games. Coming into it for the first time and not having that already inbuilt game knowledge makes the random elements just feel, again, less impactful.
Well, it's funny. In 2018, when this came out, which I swear it came out way earlier, I don't know.
Maybe the Steam release? Maybe it had a different release on consoles?
No, I think it was actually 2018 when it came out. It just feels much longer ago than it actually turned out to be. I'm not sure I had even played a randomizer or seen anyone play a randomizer yet at that point.
2018, I think that was around the time where I sort like it. Yeah, it's hard to tell the history of these kinds of things. Like, when did they hit like zeitgeist status? When, like,
yeah,
I don't know about popular streamers, but I know a few of the old Let's Play folks that I still follow were getting into them, especially with Aria of Sorrow and Soten.
Yeah, and so I guess the feeling I get from this is just that they didn't go far enough with the randomizer-esqueness, right? Like, the fact that the abilities are in a linear order kind of bums me out a little.
Yeah, that's actually one of the joys of like these kinds of Metroidvania randomizers is, okay, you didn't get the double jump, but you got something else within, how are you going to navigate things geared towards a double jump when you have other means that do almost the same thing, or you just take a weird random other route. It's a creative aspect that doesn't exist when, okay, even this game, which is always randomized, you're still going to get the cling glove into, I actually forget what all the things are in this game.
They're pretty forgettable.
Yeah. Or standard, I guess. Like, there's nothing that stands out.
So, progression unlocks. There's the Kling Glove. There's the Mega Man Slide.
Oh, yeah.
Shin Guards.
To squeeze into tight areas.
There's the Parachute.
Okay, yeah. Like, there's a thing in Dawn of Sorrow that's like that. But, yes, slows your descent so you can jump further, but not higher.
There's the wall kick actually called? I don't remember.
Oh, man. Lets you climb up walls, I guess, or, you know, jump from back and forth. But I can't remember what the actual relic is. What's the narrative justification for you can defy gravity as long as you can kick good?
Yeah, I don't remember. There's the flip, and there's the scuba gear.
Oh, yeah, the scuba gear. That was that just unlock like two items total?
Yeah. Other things that are sort of progression-y is the potions, particularly the sight, speed, and time potions. Actually, speed, I don't think, actually unlocks anything, and I was very disappointed by that.
Me too. Oh, man. I was looking at this one door that starts to close as you approach it, and it's like, oh, I need to be faster. Find the potion recipe for speed. Okay, cool. Got it. Back there, just barely not fast enough, and you're thinking, am I doing this bad? Do I need to backdash into it? Is that faster now? How about my slides? What's going on here? Could not figure it out. And I don't know that there's another potion out there that stops time yet. Yeah, lost a few minutes to that one.
Yeah, yeah. I even forgot that in the second playthrough.
Gotcha twice.
I was like, all right, the speed potion. This is what you do to get that. I was like, oh, wait, that wasn't the thing that you needed to get that. Okay, I'm just going to force quit instead of going to save because that's 250 gold that I want back.
Well, I mean, gold's kind of fake at a certain point, but yeah, I get you.
I mean, I was playing on hard, and I needed all of the potions I could buy, so I guess I needed to get good.
So, okay, we'll explain what the town situation is in a bit, but in addition to the potion seller, there's also gambling, where mm-hmm. you can do slots as long as you find these tokens, and if you do, like, somewhere in the mazes and whatnot, if you do the gambler's quest and give him what he wants, you can then do memory matching for free to get a token to then put into the slots. It's kind of annoying because it's a memory game and we're adults. It's not challenging. It's just kind of annoying, but it is free. And what's also free is the slots, which are always in the exact same order. It's very deterministic. And I found that as long as I look for where the very distinctive black bar, as long as I try and hit that, my reaction time is perfectly set up to hit the 7 right after it, and if you do that, you get 500 bones or smackers or gold, depending on what kind of pervert you are. And so, I don't know, once I figured out the gambler, I bought everything. 500 is a lot of money, especially if you don't care about equipment.
I did not try to break the slot machine that much. I wasn't even that interested in like figuring out if it was deterministic, so I was just like throwing a token in and being like meh meh meh. Oh no, it wasn't a match. All right, bye.
Like, I usually don't go for slots. I think I just was pumping in just okay, these are the only thing I can do with tokens, and I just tried because I could see all the things have distinctive shapes, and I think I hit the lantern first, because that's also like a big bulky thing you can pick out as it's scrolling. I got lucky in the sense that I gave a shit at that particular time to try, and it seemed doable, and then I got it consistently. Pro tip.
I guess we should explain that fully, I guess. Sure. So you show up to a town where only the mayor is around, and everyone else has been kidnapped into the mine.
Yes, this is the story is you are a knight. There's a whole prologue section that doesn't matter. You're sent to the town to solve its mine kidnapping problem.
You're not even a knight. You're a squire.
You're a boy. You can generate a name. Yeah. You're essentially nameless, faceless protagonist man.
Yeah.
Sorry, ladies, you've got to be boy.
Yeah, so you show up, everyone has been kidnapped by monsters from the mine, and you go in and start rescuing them, and you, like, as you adventure, you find them in cages, and then they come back up to the village, and you unlock them as an NPC in their shop, usually.
Yes, it's very, very similar to Order of Ecclesia, the last Castlevania on the DS. It works the exact same way of finding villagers elsewhere and building up and doing quests for them.
And you start out without even having a second attack.
Yeah.
That's it. You've just got the sword and also no NPCs that you can buy anything from at all until you get the magic NPC or the blacksmith.
Yeah, and you can miss one or two of them, technically. Like, I think I just went the wrong direction for the blacksmith to begin with. I just could have gone right instead of left, and he was just, like, in that one alcove I didn't check. Regardless, in addition to useful NPCs, there is also another explorer man who is uncovering the mysteries of what's going on down here in this gorge, big hole, whatever you want to call it.
I mean, he basically exists to just info dump.
Yeah, he is the source of lore. You read his scrap notebook pages beforehand, telling about the once great civilization that used to be here. Nothing ever changes in these games. Hell, we're on round two of a game that's mostly about going in a hole.
Fair.
And the main story is, oh, there's a Lich King that's going to resurrect a dark god, and that's not great. Stop him, please. And you do. First you stop his shaman that's doing the big bad summon, but he got most of the way there, so then you have to actually hit the dark god until he stops.
I do find it funny that there's not even a plot justification for, like, why your main character never goes and was like, I need backup. He's just like, well, I killed the second to the last boss. I think I'm ready to fight a dark god.
It would look bad. Like, he's a real keener, and, like, he's just like, oh, man. They might make me sergeant for this.
Yeah, he really wants that medal.
Sure. Yeah, like, the upshot of, like, all of this is, I guess he gets knighted at the end. And it's just like, it seems like an anticlimax, honestly.
Also, he might be Jesus?
Okay, you're gonna have to explain that one, my friend.
I mean, I guess, the chosen one.
Okay.
Not Jesus, but, like, there is definitely stuff about the Lightbringer, who is foretold to bring Ulok down. And it's like, yeah, that's you, apparently.
You're just the dude who happened to be there, but sure.
But maybe this is a world where these kinds of threats are happening all the time. It's like, yeah, prophesized Lightbringer. It's just whoever we send.
Yeah, for a game that is procedurally generated, it'd suck for it to be so deterministic in its story. yeah, there's not much of a character for your main dude, which is... oh. I always find disappointing, I guess. No quips, no, like, yeah. Like, basically, the explorer dude you keep saving is just the sole form of any kind of commentary going on, but he mostly exists to just spout lore at you.
Or the mayor talking about people when you bring them back and then go talk to him again. That's basically it. Everyone has either a shop or exactly one quest. Mm-hmm. And once their quest is done, they don't, like, develop.
And also, all of their quests are find the MacGuffin somewhere in the zone. Occasionally you'll have find four random drops of a MacGuffin from dudes.
Yeah, the Hunter's one in particular is just like, go kill these specific guys to get venison. I at least had already explored the section that was there, so this was just go back and grind some mobs. Like, great.
Yeah, no. None of the quests are particularly scintillating, but other than that one, they are largely... you'll just kind of happen upon them as you do your regular explore every square inch of the map anyway. So it ends up being all right.
I'm not sure I handed in the flower on my second playthrough. Whoops.
I forget what the flower does.
I don't even remember. It's just they stole four bags of flour from me. Go find them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the bakery. The potion seller will give you his strongest potions, whether or not you can handle them. But the baker who sells food, which does mostly the same things as the health potions, limited supply.
Yeah.
I believe giving the flour gives you more inventory to buy.
I don't know. I got her so late that I was already at the point where using the food was getting a little ridiculous and I needed to buy potions.
Potions are more expensive, but depending on who you are, money is no object.
Yeah, it was definitely that, like, Link getting hit by a Lynel and then, like, tucking into an entire feast meme.
Yeah, actually. hell, even Symphony of the Night made you put it in your hand and then use it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is not a better system. I am not saying, I'm not complaining here, but also this version is, as long as you don't get hit 100-0, yeah, you kind of just nom your face on whatever you have in your pockets.
Although, like, on hard mode, I was finding food both very scarce and it was very easy for me to die.
Okay.
So, I don't know, I guess I needed to just get good, but there were definitely some segments where I was like, wow, I either need to go grind some gold so that I can afford more potions.
Oh, you don't want to do that.
Or I basically can't get hit in any room.
Huh. I did not do hard mode. I found that it was a decent enough challenge on normal, so I just kind of stuck with it. I am curious if you ever, because you need to be so careful, did you ever no-hit any of the bosses?
I did not. I did try, because I knew that no-hitting the bosses was a thing. Mm-hmm. I did try for the early ones, and I was just like, I just can't be bothered to like practice this until I get it 100% right. I can get it to like 99, and then I just get like one incidental hit. He's like, ah, come on, reset again.
Whatever, no, I'm done. I'm moving on. I've got a deadline, okay?
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently every boss, if you no-hit them, they'll drop a weapon or some sort of equipment that's unique to them.
Yeah.
Which is neat. It is unfortunate in that there's not enough unique equipment outside of that.
Yeah.
I found that a lot of the weapons are just... Well, anything that's not a sword, I was already not feeling, because anything that's not a sword can't be jump canceled, which immediately kind of just makes it things feel a lot more sluggish.
I actually really like the things with the overhead swing.
Oh, I'll bet. Like, that is the one weakness to the sword.
Which, it's a weird thing about it, but something about being able to start the animation while you're still jumping inward and land and it's coming down worked way better for me than... land canceling the sword.
Huh. I've just got too much muscle memory, maybe. It absolutely carried over. I found that this also might be a randomness thing where I only found like two or three overhead weapons total, and none of them did enough more damage to sacrifice that DPS for its slow swing.
I don't know. At some point, I had enough gold to buy one extra gold bar to be able to make the gold mace or gold hammer, whatever it was. And then that was like my go-to for a while.
Okay.
There's also the daggers, which are way faster than the sword, but way shorter range.
Yeah. Even though the art style isn't Castlevania, it does have Castlevania style hitboxes. And so getting real close to enemies is tough to not also just face tank like contact damage. This is one of those games where it's not just attack things you need to avoid. It is anytime you touch the enemy, that's a hit.
I mean, I'm fine with contact damage.
Like, it's built around that. It's just occasionally you'll find games that don't do that, and it, I don't know. I like it.
There's some people on the internet who have opinions about it.
I may as well have an opinion.
It's fine, but I don't like it in games where the enemy's attacks have more anticipation than them just walking into you.
Oh, okay.
Which has been a thing in some games. I'm just like, ah! Them deciding to keep moving was more unpredictable than them attacking.
It's the ultimate strategy. He's just standing there. Menace. Oh, there he moved.
He's just walking slowly at us.
Oh, don't touch him. His whole body's poison. But yeah, daggers, they don't lock enemies in place with hit stun. So unless you're guaranteed to kill them in the couple of slashes, I just always found swinging and like in the air, just kind of maneuvering backwards or using the backdash, which of course also exists. This is a Castlevania game.
And I mean, you can hurt enemies with the slide, but you're also very likely to also get hurt.
Yeah, it has the same problem as, I think there's a Mega Man attack that was just like boosted slide tackle, or is like the top spin.
Oh yeah, the top spin for sure.
I want to say Mega Man 3 or 5, whichever. If it doesn't kill them, your whole body's already inside of the enemy and oops, whoops. And it's not a lot of damage. Because I think it just scales off your raw stats.
I guess that's another thing, is that its progression mechanics also don't really do things in combat. If you're lucky, there'll be a wall to kick off of once you get the wall kick. Otherwise, it's basically until the double jump that they start making a difference.
And at that point, it's just, you need to have more height now to avoid attacks or to get up to where the boss is, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, the double jump's the last thing, and I feel like there's like something to be said about how interesting the progression's going to be depending on when you get the double jump. Like, usually it's cool to have the double jump late, because you'll have, like, you know, different ways to gain height. Gaining height is one of the most powerful things in these platformers. And in this one, because they just limited it to, if there's a wall, jump it and then cling to a slightly higher ledge. That's kind of all you get. There's no bomb jumping. There's no alternative, like anything you could really use to sequence break to, like, abuse any kind of physics. It's a little annoying. You can't do, like, backdashes off of ledge to gain, like, more speed to go further like you can do in some games. It's, I don't know. Maybe I just didn't explore it well enough. Maybe there is something I'm just not thinking of, but it did not lend itself to that kind of creativity.
I mean, I didn't look up a speedrun.
I didn't either, which is maybe the most damning thing of all about this game. This game that is actually probably the most designed to racing it casually. Like, everyone pick a seed, let's agree on a seed and do it. It's just like the game's kind of too long and it's, I don't know.
Yeah, it, like, it would need glitches or ways to take it on in different orders for me to think it would be interesting to do races in it.
Yeah, it's just not different enough from other games of its ilk for me to invest in this game versus, say, like, I don't know, replaying the Aria randomizer or playing a new game or playing a game that is actually, like, roguelite, like, geared towards that. I think this is kind of a bit too much of a half step in that regard. Like, I think it actually takes too much from the roguelite and, I don't know, it doesn't really make good on the randomizer aspect. I think it's a game we actually haven't played, but Bloodstained had its own randomizer thing built in.
Yeah.
But I think that one was, as far as I can remember, only okay. I think that game was also just too big to do several runs of as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I kept thinking of Rogue Legacy while playing this game, which is also sort of Castlevania inspired, but is much further on the roguelite side of things than it is on the actually a Castlevania game.
The roguelite design ethos lends itself better, like, when it's actually applied to that, because learning room patterns is then a skill so that you can do things fast. And also, Rogue Legacy is just a much faster game. Like, there's a forward dash, and you don't have to wait till 6 hours into the game to get the speed potion that does nothing else other than, I don't know, run at 1.5 times speed. It's...
Yeah, and I mean, Rogue Legacy, I think, just had challenge rooms that were more fun, right? Like, part of that was that this was a rogue-style run, and that, like, if this ended your current run, whatever, just go back. If you really want to do the same challenge room again, that's an option in that game. But, I don't know, they were a little too grounded with the abilities, I guess, is what my main complaint.
It's too reasonable. This is a game that does its taxes.
Yeah. I think it would have had a lot more fun with it if they got a little less grounded with them and you could do wacky things.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I don't know, armchair game dev over here, fucking, like, oh, what they should have done, obviously. Like, I think the goal is absolutely something worth pursuing of, like, okay, like, a procedurally generated but large-scale thing is just, it ended up being not random enough. And, like, random in both the, like, actual, like, differences in set pieces and what you could theoretically see, but also style and, like, design sensibility of, you should be able to do wild shit with your magic, not just this Castlevania staples.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just disappointing that, like, okay, when you first released the Magic Lady... And, like, oh, okay, oh, I can finally get spells. And then I just look down the list of all the spells that are in the video game. And they are just all of the sub-weapons that are in the video game Castlevania. And they all function the exact same way. You can upgrade them, but they just do the same thing, but more so. Like, slightly bigger hitbox, slightly more damage.
I guess, thinking about this, if you go further down the, like, roguelite randomness stuff in RPGs... you get to, like, Diablo.
Okay.
Right? Because Diablo is sort of a roguelike. It's got procedurally generated dungeons. They randomly generate items, which is something that they, like, a system they could have done in this, right? Is, like, instead of getting sword from enemy, you could get sword with randomly generated qualities, which I guess is kind of what the, like, blue and yellow versions are like, but they're not interesting enough randomly generated qualities, I guess.
Well, yeah, like the better versions of the sword that you'd get is just more number. It's like there's no system for elemental things. There's no status effects that you can do. Enemies don't require any of that anyway. So it would have to be like a different game, but I can see like, oh, this sword chains like a lightning bolt to like nearby enemies, let's say. And so every swing does a bit of splash damage on nearby things. So it does crowd control, which would be a thing you'd want to think about when you're swapping it out for the thing that does more damage or does specific type of damage, or I don't know. You could also do things like equipment, actually like, oh, I got this chest plate that makes me run faster and now I can make this jump early, or progression that way.
Yeah, I guess that also sort of made me think about something. They only ever really have you fight one enemy at a time.
There are occasionally like minor enemies with them, in particular in the keep, I want to say. There's those spiders from the ceiling. If you don't take them out, which again, I didn't have the axe, so it was harder for me because they're on the ceiling. They'll absolutely wombo combo you with, okay, it hits you with the webbing so you can't do anything. And then there's the other dude who's about to hit you. And then they just kind of chain damage, web, as you're trying to hit the spider, but the spider's not available to be damaged because I don't have the double jump yet. Ugh. I did not realize I could just hot swap to the axe magic.
Oh, were you...
Which would have helped.
Did you not realize you could hot swap magic?
Not at that point. I realized that.
Oh.
I don't know. Partway through the final dungeon?
Eric, that's so late.
It is quite late. I didn't need it anywhere else either. Like Molotov or holy water, let's use the terms that people know, was fine enough for everything else. And so I was happy enough just using that magic forever until I realized that, oh, I could have been a lot more versatile.
Yeah, it's all about the boomerang anyway.
Sure. I mean, I can't say I explored enough to disagree.
I just like the boomerang. It gets three hits and it makes it feel like I'm doing a lot of damage. And like each hit is chunkier than the Molotov. I don't know.
I like the Molotov just for the very, very small bits of hit stun, but it was a lingering hitbox.
And then also the throwing sword, which you can get very late game, is also great.
I got that so late. I had the build your own ultimate weapon sword already. The throwing sword just didn't do enough damage. I'm sorry.
No, the throwing sword deals more damage than the Sword of Light.
Really?
Because you can get more hits off from one swing.
That would be why. I might have just looked at the stats and thought, meh.
You throw it, and it hits on the way out, and it hits on the way back, and if you're really lucky, it hits in the middle,
okay,
too.
Captain Mathematics. Sure, three is bigger than one. You got me.
There is definitely some enemies that I managed to get four hits on because I would backdash and they would run dash through the sword again once it crossed back through them.
Yeah, I think this might have just been normal mode training wheels. Not necessary. I ended the game with so many potions. Oops, yeah.
Yeah.
What else comes to mind?
I don't know.
Do we have a contact zone or are we going straight to...
I mean, it came out in the same year as Iconoclasts, so technically we've done the context zone before.
Excellent. Yeah, unlike Iconoclasts, a game with very little exploration until the very end, but an actual main character who, despite not talking, seemed to have more of a personality.
Yeah, I guess things that we never talk about because we always forget. Graphics and music.
This looks like a, I guess, like higher res SNES game. Like it... The character models look like square sprites.
I've always thought of it as Game Boy Advance, but yeah, higher res Super Nintendo.
I like it. I like the pixel art, especially the larger enemies. They blow up nice. And by blow up, I mean both explode and be big.
Yeah, for pixel art, it's pretty infunctional. I mean, since we mentioned Iconoclasts, I think Iconoclasts is a little prettier.
Yeah, it has a more distinctive style as well. Like, very few other games look like it, I would say. Other than other Cognac games. But yeah, graphically it's fine, but it's also not, I guess, again, story of the whole game's life. There's nothing surprising that happens in the game, I guess.
And musically, I mean, it was good. I won't say it was like iconically memorable, but it didn't grate on me.
Yeah, no stinkers, I will say that. There are only 5-6 areas total. So
yeah.
Like... you're going to be in each area for a while, and they didn't grate, so good enough.
Yeah, felt appropriate.
Yeah, and you'll, as always, be hearing it beginning and ending, so we will let you be the judge. But in this case, we're the judges on how good this game stacks against the rest of the stack rank.
I'm thinking kind of low.
It would be wild if at the end of that we're just like, but it's number 4, right above Symphony of the...
Yeah, it's just a matter of how low I want to go.
Maybe you start at your lowest Castlevania, which looks like Aria of Sorrow.
I think I had more fun with Aria than I had with this.
Now, what about Metroid Zero Mission, which is just below that?
So what I'm thinking of is whether I'm putting it above or below Aquaria, which is at number 23 for me.
Wow. Soaring below even the MSX debacles of Maze of Galleus and Legacy of the Wizard.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's being a little harsh on them. This is a perfectly playable game.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
Like, maybe because I was on hard, but I don't know. I started to get kind of grump about it. Like, there were some points where it was just like, if I got hit, I had to, like, make a decision of, like, am I just going to go back to the last save and try again? Because I don't have enough potions or healing items, and I don't have the potion shop or the baker unlocked yet.
And there are, like, long stretches between save points.
Yeah. So it's like, all right, so it's either hope I get lucky and don't get hit. Like, I think I generally, in hard mode, had 3 hits.
Ooh.
It's like, okay, so if I get hit, I have to decide, am I close enough to start again? Mm. Or do I think that the next shortcut or save is close enough that I can press on? Or I just try anyway and die. And, like, I actually, like, got rare drops and was far away from a save point. And was like, I don't really want to try to go back, because the enemies are also regenerating behind you when you exit rooms, right?
Absolutely.
And so, like, for instance, I got the Bone Whip the first time I was in the catacombs.
Oh, I never got that.
That was also my first whip. I got it before I went back and got the leather whip in the mine. And then I lost it because I died.
It is such a narrow path to tread of cool tension of not wanting to, like, you know, lose the stuff, and annoying backtracking slash, well, there's all my progress gone.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks to suck, I guess, but for hard mode and for me, it was definitely too far on the, oh, I'm just gonna screw up and die and have to redo this, and it'll be the exact same except the items will be different.
Are we gonna have to put in, like, a parenthesis on the list of Chasm hard mode specifically?
Nah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's one of the flaws of the game, kind of becoming in sharper focus.
Yeah, why not? I'll put it just below Zero Mission. You've convinced me. It'll be 20 above the MSX games and Yoku's.
Okay. Sure, like, put it where you want. I mean,
you've twisted my arms here.
I literally just pointed it out and then kind of chuckled to myself. So, man.
Yeah. It's still playable. The bosses were fine, although I didn't really feel that much interest in learning how to properly dodge their patterns. I don't know what it is about the patterns in this game that I just, like, it's like, whatever, I got hit. I'm not that interested in learning how to perfect it. I don't know.
It might just be one of those things of it's not inspiring creativity in any sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good to do super well anyway. Like, if you'd gotten the cool weapons, great, but I don't know. So yeah, that's your new number 20?
Yep.
Well, what a coincidence. Despite having a bit of a different path to it, different makeup of my list, mine's also going to end up being number 20, just above Aquaria. Similar thinking there. And below Gato Roboto, which I feel got in and got out real smooth, as opposed to, yeah. I think Chasm's a more robust game, but for whatever reason, my heart does not sing for it.
Yeah.
Gato I was also kind of blasé on, but I think it had more style and a unique charm to it. Like,
yeah.
Even if it is just, like, monochrome cat robot, that's more than I can say about a knight who goes in a hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just kind of, I feel mean. It wasn't that I was having a bad time. It's unfortunate that the only things to talk about are the nits, because all the good stuff is, oh, have you played a Castlevania?
It's the difference between a competent Castlevania cloning and something that is interestingly doing its own thing, comparing it to Deedlid and Wonder Labyrinth, which we liked a lot better.
Exactly. That one had unique mechanics, as well as, like, despite the story being absolutely incomprehensible to the non-fans of the source material, it had characters.
Yeah.
Instead of just vague justifications for an NPC store.
Yeah.
But regardless, now that we're done with that, now that we kicked that one into the well, I think it is time for us to complete our trilogy of going into holes with Knit Underground.
Knit Underground?
Yeah. It is, I guess, the last in the Knit series / Within a Deep Forest by indie game creator Niflis. Like, it came out in like 2012, but it was like the culmination of a bunch of freeware games he had made in the past, including Knit Stories, which was actually like an engine for other people to make games. I kind of toyed with the idea of doing like a collection of those, but it's too hard. It's too hard to like actually gather the good stuff and separate the wheat from the chaff. So instead, this is a game I never actually played. So I actually have no idea how much, if at all, this will count, but it looked like it should, and it looked like it should be a good time.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard of this before.
Really? Yeah, no, it was back in the, like, when Cave Story was, like, sorta new and, like, indie games, or at least in the spots of the internet I hung out with. And it was a deal. Not a huge deal, but a deal. And if anyone has a problem with that, they can kiss my ass or send an email to invertedcastlepodcast@gmail.com. We are, of course, on all the social media platforms, including X. Love that X. At InvertedCastlePP. Never forget the P. If you want to leave us a review, only 5 stars, please, or whatever metric. Leave 5 exclamation points. I don't care. Just put it anywhere.
Send your hate mail to the comments on YouTube. I don't know.
Absolutely. But that's it for us, I think. I've been Eric Fox.
And I've been Thomas Blight.
And remember, kids, it's not your fault. It was the random number generator.